The following audio was recorded at the Pacific School Leadership Institute, which was held October 21 and 22, 2021, at Waits Lake Open Bible Camp near Valley, Washington.
I'm just curious, how many of you are teachers now? Oh, good. Okay. A few school board members, ministers, et cetera. Okay. Very good. It's sometimes challenging when some are teachers and board members. You're seeing things from different perspectives, of course. But most of all, you have different responsibilities. So it does shape how you interact with questions and the school. All right. This word intentional has become rather popular, hasn't it? Intentional this, intentional that. What? Why? I mean, I'm thinking 20, 30 years ago, I don't think we heard of this word. You need to be intentional. Or intentional about this, intentional about that. Intentional school, intentional in relationships. What does intentional mean to you? If you're intentional about school structure, what are you? Give me some other words.
Focused.
Okay, focused, good. What else?
Purpose.
Planned. Mm-hmm.
Know why.
Okay.
Organized. On purpose.
Motivated. Okay, so there would be lots of other words we could use if we get tired of using the word intentional. Broaden it a little bit. School structure is not the same as school culture. Will you have a school culture whether or not you try to shape it? Of course. There is nothing like a culture-less school. There's always a culture. I have the privilege of getting into many schools. I think last year maybe it was in 60-some. This year I should get into more because I have quite a list that is sort of in a district or whatever you call it, that since I live in an area that's rather highly populated with conservative people, Anabaptist schools. Every single one has a culture. It's always fascinating. You can just kind of smell it when you walk in the door. There's nothing like a culture-less. Does every school have a structure? Or are there sort of structure-less schools? Well, obviously there's some structure to every school, but I think in some ways, structure in school needs attention. And so intentional school structure is an appropriate title. It takes a pursuing, a deliberate pursuing. That is not to imply that culture does not. Culture absolutely needs an intentional shaping as well. But you can seriously lack structure in a school. I don't know if you can seriously lack culture in a school. It's just a bad culture, possibly. Now, what is the difference between a professional school structure and an intentional school structure? Do you feel some pushback in your own heart about this intentional school structure? What are we trying to do? Are we trying to be professional? We're trying to be heisey-ticey here? We're trying to be, you know, this. Do you feel some of that? Do we hear some of that in our circles? Well, no, wait a minute. We've been doing okay. School's been just, I mean, it's, what's going on here? Why are we having seminars? Why are we sending our teachers to go, you know, it's been good. Why? Is there a difference between professional and intentional school structure? I would like to suggest that there is. I am deeply concerned about the professional push that I see in our conservative schools. I don't know what you face out here, so anything I say is surely not talking about your school, I assure you. I come from the East. I don't know if they tend to like this professional image more than the West. I have no idea. And I'm not wanting to say that in a critical way. But I do feel like there is a ramped up push, especially in some of the big schools. And I know you don't have quite as large of a school as where there's hundreds of students in the school. And it's, how do we differentiate between now what is really motivated by reputation, by image, by a flair, versus what is really good for the school? And I'm not sure that I can sort all, I know I can't sort all of that out. But I think it's two words let's think about in your own thinking, in your own development, in your school. When am I motivated by what is professional. It's outside of what is focused on the children, academics, growing in Christ. It's more about the image of who we are. And so we use the word sometimes professional in a good way when it means intentional. So I have a friend who has a business called Professional Automotive. I don't look at that and say, oh, you're just trying to be smart. Or we offer professional services. Oh, you're just trying to be arrogant and smart and heady. And so I don't want to take this word professional and just demolish it or act like it's all carnal. But let's admit we have a lot of carnal tendencies in our heart and pride. If we're not careful, that we want an image, to project an image that is beyond what is good. And so that component of professional, where it's about a projection in the community, we want people to think of a certain way that kind of, and in our hearts, we just have to grapple. I cannot define exactly where that is because I don't know exactly where that is. And it's the nuances of that are a little hard, isn't it? Kind of goes back to the difficulty of communication. What did he say? Language is a poor communicator? Wow, what am I doing up here anyhow? That flies in the face of education. But what a point that was, for sure. We can be misunderstood so easily. So I don't want to be misunderstood in this question of professional and intentional. That is the component of professional. That means we know what we want. We're working hard for it. We're not sloppy. Versus the negative of the professional. So when we come back to the question of why do we need this intentional structure? If we come back to what is our job all about in school, it becomes very clear that we need significant structure. Now, it depends on the size of the school, depends on the amount of grades, and on how much. I had the privilege of teaching, I believe, 8 years in a small school. It was grades about 15 to 25 students. I taught grades 5 to 10, 6 to 10, 5 to 9, whatever was in those grades. Well, we didn't have the structure. Where I taught most of my years in a large school, larger school, where we had over 100 students. Wow, we needed more bells to ring. We needed schedules for who does what and where, because there's a lot of movement in the school. So it was entirely different structure. So we come back to the question of, we need the amount of structure, or how much structure do we need to do well inside the culture that we're working in, and system that we're working, and that varies. So I'm pretty hesitant to say, well, here's what you should do, here's what you should do. I don't think that's why you came. Well, it varies so much. It also varies with culture. Different cultures appreciate different amount of structure. And so I think those who were here last evening, I at least cautioned in being careful that when we think there's some significant structural changes should be made in the school, well, be careful. Maybe the culture isn't, maybe it shouldn't be. Or maybe it should be done slowly and carefully, not just, you know, with a quick change. Does that make sense? Where we can rush the structure because we're sure it's good, and maybe indeed it is, but we can actually hurt our chances of developing a good culture through years and years of teaching if we rush it too quickly. So a sensitivity, I think, is certainly important here. Well, we know, and we've heard this many times, God is a God of order. Look around us. God even established headship. Order, who's responsible for what? Our structure in the world, the more scientists study, the more we understand structure, they understand structure, and can help us understand what they're seeing. A structure down to the atomic level. It's incredible. Structure is what makes life possible. Rules and laws is what makes life work. It all collapses if that collapses. And so indeed in school, as we come back to the question of what does it take to seize the opportunity we have to raise these children, what does it take? And to be willing to work hard and structure accordingly. So point number one is simply some general considerations. Clear vision. It's rooted in clear vision. Whose vision? My vision. The board's vision. The ministry's vision. The student's vision? Well, complex question. Again, I come back to, we find our way in community. And it grieves me when I hear of a teacher or of a board member whose vision is so different from everybody else that they just cannot contribute. So as teachers, it's rooted in vision, but that vision is a collective vision. Not just, well, I have been to this training, or I have taught now this many years. I see what it would take to structure this school well. Fit in to the culture. Accept the clarity that other people bring. I think part of the vision is to visualize a graduating student, a finishing student. They come to school. How much time have you, teachers, has the board spent looking at this graduating student and saying, what do we want that student to look like? It would be fascinating to do that in your school. Have your teachers and your board members give 5 characteristics of what you want this student to look like. Because it would crystallize a vision of what we're doing all in 3 years. Because we figured out what we want here. And what I think would be amazing is how little academics would show up on this list. And study habits and character and spiritual formation would be on this list. Ah, then what are we doing back here? To get to these points. I love academics. I taught long enough. If I didn't like academics, I should have got out long ago. I love books, I love biology, I love chemistry and algebra, I love academics, but it is true, once they're out and life moves on, those things fade. I have 5 children out of school. One wants to finish in high school, sort of animals. 16 and works part-time. I think of what do my students know? My children know from school. I'll tell you, that's what we're going to need to look at. And are we getting it done back here? See, if we're not careful, we do a little bit like maybe my son used to do. Maybe your son does this. At about 3, 4, 5 years old on a Saturday, they go out and find the toolbox. And you simply get a tool. And what I do now has to do with not the job to get done, it has to do with the tool I have in my hand. So if I have a hammer, bang, bang. If I have a screwdriver, where's the receptacles? The tool defines the job. As we get older, the job defines the tool. And sometimes that's what we're doing in our schools is, what's the tools? Well, it's a structure that's already in place. It's a curriculum. Oh, what do we do here? Well, let's see. What do we have? Oh, this is what we teach. Okay, so we're going to teach this and that. Well, we're not void of tools. I'm not saying that. But when we think of the job we want to get done, then in reverse, we see these tools as tools instead of tools as defining what we do. And so again, back to boards and administration. What are the tools in your school? And do your teachers understand that they're not an end in themselves? Because it's all working toward this. But do we even know what this is? Have we decided what this is? Too often, again, there's a lot of work just surviving in our schools, isn't there? Just finding a teacher, just figuring out how to pay them, that's a lot of work. Just keeping the momentum up that we don't have much energy sometimes to be doing this. But structure should really surround the vision here. Not just with the details of here. Another reason for structure, or just general consideration, is it provides consistency. It provides consistency. Teachers change. Students go from grade to grade. Indeed, there are changes that come as you go from teacher to teacher. There's personalities. But the more structure you have in place, and it's one thing that I think our schools are trying hard to do, and that solidifies some of these structures so that there's not shifts that are beyond what's healthy as we move from teacher to teacher and year to year. So intentional school structure means somebody's putting work into creating some kind of infrastructure, framework, so that the new teacher can step into it and pick up, oh, it will shape around their personality, of course. There'll be some definite changes in how things are handled. But the more that structure is in place, the more there's a consistent application and a security of those students. Sometimes you hear schools that, you know, the new teacher comes in and everything sort of collapses pretty quickly. I've seen this happen, unfortunately. You know, it's just kind of like, ah, the grading system, the conduct, the rule, everything just kind of, where was the structure? If teachers don't step into a certain amount of responsibility that's already pre-described, you're asking for tremendous changes at the whim of the teacher. And then we don't like that. Well, you know, we maybe created the problem at times. Again, there will be personality shifts. There will be changes. There's enough changes in schools when the next teacher comes on board. Especially inexperienced teachers finding their way. That's okay, of course. But the more structure can be in place, the less disruptive and fearful it is when we have change. And from room to room. This child goes from one room to the next, another teacher, the next. Oh, yes, there's differences. But if they're too great, it's unsettling. And after all, well, that teacher's this way because the structure is pretty much left up to the teacher. So I'm kind of going back to the responsibility, first of all here, of the board. In letter C, which is somewhat similar, it's security for everybody, for the parents, the teachers, and the students. It's for their security to know that, yes, my child's going to the next room. Yes, we have a new teacher coming. And you know, another reason we need structure, school boards, and some of this we'll look at under some more practical consideration. But one reason that we teachers need the structure is because we fluctuate in how we cope with school day to day. So I've done not much outside of teaching, a little bit though. I sold cars for a couple years. I've done some carpentry over the summer. And you know, you wake up in the morning some days and you just don't feel that good. Sometimes you know why, and sometimes you don't know why, right? And you can go about your day rather quietly. Hopefully you're not slamming things around because you're frustrated, but you can just kind of, you know, you sort of reflect the emotions that you're feeling in how you, you know, just go through the day. You know, teachers aren't supposed to do that very much at all. We're supposed to have the best foot forward every single day. I believe I have this at the top of another under teacher tending, but I'm going to say it now. A little saying that I really like. The best thing about teaching is that it matters. The hardest thing is that it matters every day. Okay? Now think of that. The things that teachers face, and some of that I'm going to discuss in other talks. I don't want to get too much into that. But to remember, structure helps a predictability that the teachers need. It can be the structure you as a teacher put into place. It's not just about boards and administration. This is structure that you as teachers work hard to put into place. It's for your safety as well. So that when life is difficult and you're facing tough things outside of school, you have some things in place that's going to guide your day in a healthy way and framework. Lest you live out of that in an unhealthy way. Yes, students can tell. Some days we feel better than others. I'm sure that's true. But we need to work hard at just being the same person day after day after day. One teacher told me that his students said, well, they can tell what mood he's in by the way he combs his hair. So teachers, one tip, comb your hair the same way every day. Just always same way. don't know if it was true that the students could tell that or not, but it was interesting that they told them, oh, it depends how you come here, and we kind of read that, oh, watch out today, I don't think it's a good day, or today looks like, hey, this looks like a good day, let's enjoy it. Security, and the students, of course, most of all, need that. Any questions on that? Yes. Very good question. I have some of that here under the next section, so we'll get to that. Now, it's a very good question. Maybe I'll just pick up with that on letter B, on the standards, policies, etc. Thank you for that question. Any other questions or comments? I would love to, if I don't have to do all the talking. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes.
Any other
Yes.
Anybody else missing, but they can ask. Could you hand it over here, please?
I'm sorry about that. I failed to ask once I was ready to start. And I'm sorry to keep checking the time, but there is no clock in here. And I am a fairly time-conscious person. I don't want to run over schedule. Okay. Well, let's talk about then reserved and delegated responsibility. Now, does anybody know where we talk about this in politics? Just curious. And I kind of drew it from that, but I want to make this comparison. Reserved and delegated. I believe this really goes back to this whole concept. Of course, this is an obvious thing, but these words, reserved and delegated, some of it goes back to when the United States began in the 1700s, was colonized. Where did the power lie? In the hands of the state or a federal government? Where was it? Right, the state came first. So this is fascinating to think about and to imagine how much our government has changed. At first, it was the colonies that had the power. And so as they worked toward creating a federal government, that was a huge concern. Oh, they're going to become too powerful. If we give them power, then we lose power because it's going to them. And so reserved powers was really what the state said, we will not give the federal government. And delegated power was what the states agreed should be vested in a central government. Now, we don't think that way, do we, today? Not when we look at our government. We don't really see that playing out so well that it's that direction. It's the other direction, 200 and some years later. Well, we know that in schools, it is not that way. It is not that the teachers delegate responsibility to the board. It is the other way, and it should be the other way. And so this somewhat depends on school structure, but I think here is where we end up with a fair amount of misunderstandings and sometimes unfortunate things that happen. So how is your school structured? Talk about intentional school structure. Well, what is a structure? Who's responsible for what? Is it the ministry? Can they step in and say, that's how it is? Is the power vested in the board? Does the buck stop there? Is it in the patron body? The buck stops there? Well, it depends on school structures. There's schools do have this different structures, but it's important that the school knows what is a structure and that they know what is a structure before it becomes an issue of who has the authority. Because once there's a problem on the table, if that's the time then to figure out, well, who's responsible for what, now we have a lot of emotion on the table, don't we? And there's complications just because of that. So whatever that structure is, I would not feel like I should. This is the better, that's the better. There's lots of ways of doing it that God has blessed. Communities are different. So wherever it is, we do think of it as the power at the top, whether that's the ministry or the patron body because of the style of school, or the board, which would be typical in most of our schools, I suppose. I'll just put a B for our board. We could think of that. That is the reserved powers. And then, from there, they delegate responsibility. To whom? And how? Sometimes there's some layers under that. It depends if there's an administrator or a principal in which a lot of responsibility is vested in that person or a head teacher. So, possibly, most of this, in some schools, it would pretty much flow to whatever they decide to delegate to the principal. And the principal then, at least he's sort of a filter middleman in between the board and then the teachers. And again, there's all kinds of flow charts and papers, et cetera, and I don't understand all those complexities, and I'm not going to try to get into that. But just thinking about, make sure that your school has an intentional understanding of this. If you wait until you have a problem on your hands, and now who has the authority to resolve this, that's not a good time. And makes there's a lot of emotion on the table, as we say. So looking right up front at clarifying what is reserved powers, what does the board say, this is our job, and what is delegated, and to whom is it delegated? One easy example is hiring. Now, I come from a setting where I, as a principal, never hired the teacher. I might be involved in the interviews or involved in discussing who might be hired, but I did not hire. But I know of administrators or principals, school settings, that I, you know those principals, and oh, they hire the teachers. How interesting. And they have the power then to fire the teacher as well. Or as one teacher said, one good friend of mine who's in a very large school, principal, he says, we tried to counsel them out. So we always have this joke on counsel people out of their positions. You don't fire them, you say, this is, you know, fitting for you, and you try to help them to not, you know, even want to teach the next year. So that's his job as principal. Well, that's probably a very clear line, right? Whose job that is. But there's lots of other things that are not as clear. So just again, encouraging boards especially to sharpen those lines where they are fuzzy before they need to be clarified because of situations. And now let's move into some of these questions. Standards, policies, grading, discipline, etc. And I'd be curious to know a little bit how your schools do this. Standards. Let's just talk about standards in terms of a code of conduct and even dress standards. How many of you have that in your school? There is something written down. Okay. Do you think that's important? Why? Why is that important to you?
It gives less room for everything that can happen. It just brings clarity.
So do you distrust the parents and you're afraid they're going to try to do things that you wouldn't like, and so you can go back to the rules and say, I'm not allowed to do that. There. That's right. Okay. Well, you're pretty. That's right.
Well, I've had to do that.
So you're pulling from experience here.
That is great because you have that backup.
Yeah.
It gives you that vested authority that you were talking about, mm-hmm. to do something with it, mm-hmm. instead of just letting this problem,
right,
be created.
Very good. Respect. Yes.
So put you on that one round.
Okay. All right. So create some uniformity. And again, this does vary from culture to culture. I just find this fascinating. I would be more used to, yes, I mean, we've got some things written down that we can kind of go back to and, hey, no, wait a minute, you know, send a standard violation paper home, you know, forms, which we had. And, you know, you don't even have to make the phone call, right? Write it down, put an envelope, and hope the problem goes away. Well, I don't know if I like that as good as I used to, because it feels like it's a little cold and calculating. But I was visiting the school just the other day, actually. What, 2 days ago? Is that what it was? Wednesday? Yeah, it was Wednesday. And a different church setting, very, very conservative, more your brethren type of church background. And I relate a lot to that school and to some of the administration with my work in Christian Light. And so we talked about it, and they said, no, they have such a long culture of how they do things that, especially at church standard levels, they have virtually nothing written down. That's just who we are. I mean, this is suspenders and hats. I mean, they're very conservative, but a fairly flexible group as far as who all they relate to. But how their own culture works. Wow, how would you have such a strong culture? I visited the school, and they have quite a few children from other churches coming in. And I asked them, so what about your standards here? And, well, we have a couple basic things written down. And they had a level of flex that some of our schools maybe wouldn't feel comfortable with. But the families, you know, pretty much respected how they, you know, they didn't dress nearly like that particular culture would have been so different than what they were used to. But they fit in modesty-wise and just overall that it was considered acceptable. So there can be a strong culture of expectation that might work for a small community, that is your school is larger, or you have families from other church groups coming. that you need more of that in place. So again, how much? What works for you is really the question. What works for your culture? But at least something that allows you to navigate those tough questions before they become tough questions. Policies. How many of you have policies written down? And let's kind of wrap in here grading. How many have clear policies as far as like code and conduct would fall under this, but let's even use more pass-fail, entrance levels, age. How many of that written down? Okay, some do. So what are you going to do if you don't have this written down? And let's say it's understood. We ran into this former student of mine that's having revivals at our church this week. Unfortunately, got him missing. He talked about his daughter the other evening when he was at our house. He said she missed school by one day. The cutoff mark by one day. Now, some schools don't have that written down. You know, you shall be six by the time school starts. It's understood. Sometimes school starts on August 24, sometimes on August 25, once in a while August 28. Huh? Well, you know, last year my child would have been six when school started. This year they're not. I mean, it's not my fault. I didn't write up the schedule. I know this sounds awfully hard-nosed, but I would encourage you. I've gotten numerous calls from schools through the years saying, what do we do? We've got a parent that's all pushing and pushing for that and their child to come. They won't be 6 to 3 weeks into school or 2 weeks or a month, but their child is smart, granted, and then you're ready to get about read or she, and of course, you know, very smart child, of course. Everybody thinks their child is probably a little bit above the spectrum, you know. I tend to think that way. And if asked, what's your policy? Well, we don't really have a policy. It's just kind of understood. I'd encourage you to make a rule, a policy, before you have that parent asking you and decide what you want to do. I don't know. It's up to you. If you allow that person one day, what about somebody? 3 days. 2 years later. Believe me, they'll remember what you decided back here. He said that's exactly what happened to him. He said, he's a minister, he's a very congenial fellow. He said, nope, she did not go. He said, because the next year or another, he said, there's another student coming along and their birthday is just days later than my child. And he said, if I'd ask for an exception, well, what's 3 days? Well, what's 3 days? How many times do you want to ask, what's 3 days? I mean, after a while, you're way out here. But it is never more than 3 days than the previous person you allowed in. So no matter where you draw a line, you're going to have something on both sides that you can hardly reconcile. That's what lines do, okay? That's what lines do. That's what grades do. That's what policies do, whether it's pass, fail. It draws lines of which something on both sides is inexcusably close. But that's what lines do. Because no matter where you draw them, that potential is there. And so sometimes we don't want to draw a sharp line, but then we're grappling with these questions. And there's emotion on the table. It's somebody that we're a little scared of, right? A little scared to say no. If it's not because of the dad, it's because of the mom, maybe. I'm saying that kindly. I'm just saying we can have those situations and all upset and frustrated and say things that we wish they would have never said. And so I'd encourage you, draw that line.
It helps if you have history behind that line.
Okay, all right, some precedents. How about pass, fail? Do you have those lines clearly in place? How many would say yes, it's clear. The numbers are the numbers. Only a few, like does a child go to the next grade or not? What about what it takes to enter beyond the age? Now, this could vary with your state. Some states, Pennsylvania now is saying this, and we still aren't quite sure how we're going to relate to it. You must be in school if you're six. You must be. Well, before, it didn't matter if you were six. It had to be two things. You had to be six, and you had to pass the entrance test. Well, now we're not quite sure what to do with it, but do some of you have some kind of entrance test, preschool test they take? Do you have a sharp line where to draw that? Again, I'm not saying you have to, but I would say it might be good. You might wish one day you had. If you wait until you have to, again, and it's something that we went through at our school quite a few years ago, maybe 15 years ago, I don't remember. We finally looked at this whole thing saying, hey, really, there's no exact line. line. I called other schools. I called the people who made up the test. Where do you draw the line? What do you think? And we spent hours going through, well, however many students were in the school, 100 and some, and looked at every report card from all the grades and went back to the entrance test. And we've given that, I think it might be on the, it might be on the doc, I'm not sure, but we've given it out to schools to just try to help look at this whole thing. We said, you know what? Students who came in at, like, let's say a 45 or lower, we evaluated all the report cards that were in their portfolio. Those who came out at a 45 or lower, this is not a percentile, this is just a score. Actually, they averaged, through the years, they averaged a 75. And that was maybe five, this isn't quite accurate, but you know, that was 5% of our students. Students who came in at a 50 or lower, that was 10% of the students, they averaged, again, there's exceptions on all sides, but they averaged maybe a 78. And those who came in, and we just laid it all out in blocks of maybe 5 or 10, whatever it was. What percent come in at that, and how they did through the years. That was a tremendous ammunition to the parents. And to me, it was very fair. And a child who came in at a 45, we said, look, here's where it is. It's a 45. We looked at students in the past, talked about history. We actually are drawing a line. They have to be at a 50 or above. We just drew that line. It was tough. Come in at a 47. Yeah, but my child was all nervous when they took the test, and my child actually at home does so well. Will you retest? We lost a patron, a non-member patron, and we said we won't retest because that's just an emotional journey. You know, we'll retest in a few weeks. Yeah, to a different school. And it was okay. We blessed him. Gave him all the records. No problem. We're not saying he shouldn't go to school. We're just saying not our school. Why? Because we have a line. If you don't have a line, if we accept you, we got to accept the next person. So drawing that line of entrance can be very helpful. It's just a couple little things, I think, that create some structure that can save challenges down the road. Any questions on that? Or maybe how you do it, and it works, and it's fine. I'm not certainly not saying these are the only way to do things.
Are you familiar with the CLD readiness test?
I should be. Only a little bit. Are you talking about the one that just came out in the last months? Yes. I have it. I looked at it just briefly. I do not know exactly where they're drawing those lines, but they could tell you at the office or your rep could tell you. I should find out that because there's no schools used it yet that I know of. I mean, it will be ready for this coming year, for next year, unless it was ready in spring. It was just off the press here a few months ago. But I hope that Christian Light helps to draw that line and say, well, you know what? Here's what we would at least suggest, that if they don't come in up to this point, do you ask them to wait? Unless you legally must send the child. Of course, in our situation, if a child failed 1 year, the next year they went because they needed to go to school. Even if they didn't quite, maybe we work with the child, try to give them work to do. So I want to clarify that. At some point, the child does need to go to school. So good question as far as, was that your question where CLE is going to, you know, what they suggest for drawing the line? Okay, yes, I cannot answer that. 5 minutes? Okay. Discipline, again, precedence for discipline is important. Although I would not suggest, and here I'm going to probably tip on the other side, there are some schools who have very strict policies written down in their handbooks. How many schools have some kind of a handbook? Or it's written down somewhere. Okay, a lot do. Listen, I would not push for a big fancy handbook. I was asked to consider being an administrator in a school out of state one time years ago, and they said, well, we'll send you the handbook. I admired the work they put into it, but it was incredibly detailed, just page after page after page. If this happens, this here, if this happens. I mean, it was scenarios that I cannot imagine ever would happen, although they can, but it was like, wow. I mean, most of us don't have that energy, or maybe vision is the problem. But I'd encourage you at least to have some things written down. If that's what you decided, and the board decided, again, who is the authority to decide that, that it gets written down and becomes at least part of a mini handbook, if nothing else. How much discipline should be in there? I would personally feel, I want to say this carefully, I would personally feel minimum. And that's simply because of this. What is fairness and sameness are not the same word. Okay? And what we're doing is we're trying to create fairness by sameness. And so if a child does this, here's what happens. If she does this, that's what happens. Are you sure you want to stick with that in every situation? I just be cautious. It's a broad subject. Any comments about that? How much you feel discipline should be written in handbooks? I'm not talking about standards here. I'm talking about discipline as in discipline to the children for actions.
I think it's okay to write the method of discipline now.
Okay.
Maybe not as much as, you know, the fit what crime, but
okay.
I think the method needs to be.
Okay. That's a good point. Thank you for that. So there are possibilities a child may be suspended for this, or the corporal punishment in the lower grades. I mean, some things kind of laid out that these are methods that we believe or not. I mean, some schools do steer that differently, and for various reasons, I don't really have a lot to comment on that. But again, what is a community? What works for your community? But writing some of that down gives some structure. Yes. And the advantage, of course, is consistency, as I sort of pushed at the beginning. And it's not up to the whims of the teacher. Well, that's where administration needs to have their hands on the discipline in the school and not up to the whims of the teacher. That they're off doing this and that and the administration doesn't even know it. It really should not be that way. I do not feel like there should be authority vested in the teacher for some of those disciplines without approval. And I might feel like you're holding them back, but the truth is she might just be glad for that one day. When she's emotionally caught up in the situation and meets out a discipline that actually wasn't the wise call, and it would have been better for administration to have been involved. I would feel pretty. It's a way not to strip them of authority, but to protect them from a difficult situation that's very hard to back out of once you've crossed the line. So maybe that goes to administration. Typically, the principal does have authority. I think I would have authority to suspend for 3 days. I still don't like to get a hold of the principal if I could. I mean, the chairman, and say, look, here's what I'm up to. Pretty serious offense. Listen, this child really should go home today and then be back tomorrow. Let's just take care of it, given the situation, given whatever. But still, yes, go ahead and do that. Whew, it's nice to have that. So the flow chart, last of all, quickly on that for the last minutes. Creating flow charts, it doesn't have to be written down, but it really should be clear who is responsible, the buck stops where. And this is multiple levels now. I think this can work for flow charts for the parents. If the parents are frustrated, who do they call? Maybe they call the teacher. I was talking to a board member just the other day at a seminar in different state, different church culture, and he said, he was used to it. It's all set up. Like, if you don't like this, you talk to this person. And then if that doesn't work, you go to this person. I mean, it was complex. I was like, but it was impressive. At least it was well laid out. Who goes where if there's concerns from the parents? Do you talk to the teacher? Do you talk to the principal? Do you talk to the board? If you don't, you end up with distrust. If you have no idea, so the board's up here, the parent's frustrated with the teacher, they don't like the teacher for whatever reason or are frustrated, they bypass the teacher and the principal and go right to the school board. Oh, so that's okay, it's okay. If it's not okay, then say it's not okay. Make sure it's clear with the parents. I think in our school we had the understanding, even though it was never written down, that we asked parents to bring concerns or questions, I think that's more questions to the teachers, criticism to the principal. I really do not want mothers calling or dads calling the teacher 10 minutes after school with a criticism. If it's a criticism, please give that to the principal and they'll handle it from there down. If it's just a concern, for instance, my child had a bunch of homework recently, fourth grade. What's going on? He's really conscientious right now and just everything, you know, sensitive conscience. I have no problem calling the teacher and saying, hey, this is fine. I'm not frustrated with you whatsoever. Just wondering what's happening at school. Is he just erasing everything? Or what's, you know, help me understand. Is he frustrating you that you need to? That's entirely different than calling and saying, I talked to 3 other moms and they all say the same thing. There is so much homework. This is ridiculous. My child, yada, yada, yada. Last year it wasn't this way. Whoa. That should get stopped. If that happens, somebody up at the top needs to call that family and say, that's how you ruin teachers. So an idea of who's responsible for what. And then it goes, this is, you know, the parents up. But then it goes down through the other way. Is it clear? Who is responsible? Is there a flow chart of who handles what? Classic examples, libraries. Who's responsible for the library? And remember this, especially administration and boards. Responsibility and authority must go hand in hand. If you expect somebody to be responsible, you must give them the authority then to carry it out. Sometimes we want to delegate responsibility. Then when they try to do it, we kind of jerk that back and jerk the authority away when, well, we told them to do it. But then when they didn't do it quite like we thought or made a judgment call that we didn't agree with, they're like, whoa. Well, if you delegate and give a responsibility, make sure you give matching authority, lest you just frustrate them. So, again, there's so many details. Days off from school. What's your policy? Do you have policy? Who makes a decision? The teacher? Can they give a week off to a student? Do you have to go to the principal? Who calls who? I heard of schools that said, if the parents want to take the child out, they call the administration. Well, we don't have that. My children are out of school 3 days, which I felt bad about, but it's sort of our chance to visit. My daughter and husband live out here in this very community, so it was a wonderful opportunity to visit them. So we called the teacher because that's the protocol. We could call the teacher, and they could say, it's okay, get your work done on ahead. Other schools, no. You call the administrator. It's a little more intimidating. You know, may we have our child out? They can grill you for all kinds of questions. Or maybe you have to call the board. Again, flow charts. Who's responsible for what? If the teacher can make the call, are responsible, then give them the authority to make the call. And don't turn around and second guess them then, because that really frustrates the responsibility that you gave them. Any questions in closing? I think it's probably about time to stop. Yes?
Maybe one question on the other side of it. Do you have anything to say about too much structure? How do you recognize that?
Good question.
Have you ever seen that?
Well, yes, I've seen, it felt to me like handbooks of which the details were just cumbersome. Too much structure in some ways where there's not the flex then to make wise decision because you're boxed in by the structure and by the policies. What do you have in mind?
I mean, it'd have to be an example, just saying, like, where do you see that coming up? Because that is a valid question, for sure.
In other words, you mentioned an example to some of the students for discipline. Mm-hmm. You have this policy, but end up realizing it's not good to bear on this situation. That or the thing of calling someone for pulling a student out of school, or what about the funeral the next day? Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's a lot of situations that crop up.
It's a good question. It's a very good question. And that's where trust goes a long way. When there's trust from the administration, when somebody does make a judgment call that maybe wasn't the best or was a little outside of their box, but under the pressure they made that call, that there's trust and grace given for that and not right away a rushing back to, well, you broke policy here. You know, you made a mistake and make people feel uncomfortable. But yeah, that's a good question.